Zombie takeout. Looks like a big car wreck.
That is why you are where you are and where I am, Scott. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, a couple things to go over. Neil Breen posted an update on the Twisted Pair Facebook page yesterday. Twisted Pair is his upcoming movie. Was it last week or the week before you saw the trailer?
I think it was last week.
He posted an update, and in it he talks about the theatrical release. He says that he's in talks with theaters around the U.S. and Canada to set it up, and he's aiming for 150 to 225 seat theaters. Because he's tried smaller theaters and they've sold out too quickly.
Of course, this is something with special effects of this magnitude. You have to see it on the big screen, I imagine.
And I'll post the link to the update in the description. I would just recommend watching it just to hear him speak because he's surprisingly articulate.
So he's more articulate when he's speaking off script than what he is in the movie.
Yeah, actually. Not much more natural, of course. I honestly think he must be in on the joke.
Yeah.
And one more thing to go over. The second film by Panos Cosmatos, writer-director of Beyond the Black Rainbow, which we reviewed back in 2012 and scars me. Oh, 2013, sorry. Okay. And still scars me. His second film, titled Mandy, will be released on September 14th. It stars Nicolas Cage as Red Miller, who, quote, has fallen deeply for the deceptively charming Mandy Bloom, played by Andrea Riseborough. However, the life he has made for himself comes crashing down suddenly and horrifyingly when a vile band of ravaging cultists and supernatural creatures desecrate his idyllic home with vicious fury. Of course, he has to get revenge. Nicolas Cage, as we were talking about before the show, is due. He gets one good performance a decade.
And I believe we had this discussion on the show, right? Every 10 years.
Yeah, he gets a good one every 10 years. Adaptation.
Kick-Ass, I think, Kick-Ass was the last one. It was about 10.
Yeah, early 1000s. So, yeah. Kick-Ass, Adaptation. What was the 80s?
Coen Brothers, Brothers. Raising Arizona.
Right, yeah, Raising Arizona. I think he doesn't go back to the 70s. So Raising Arizona, adaptation, Kick-Ass.
Honestly, the 80s was his,
Well, his heyday, of course. And I mean, yeah. Las Vegas, I haven't seen it, but I've heard great things about it.
Everyone loves Moonstruck, Valley Girl.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Yeah. So 80s, he had a few. But since then, 90s hit, it was really just adaptation. And then, which I highly recommend, great movie. And then Kick-Ass, which we reviewed years ago. Malkovich is in it?
No. Never mind. I confused Cusack with Nicolas Cage.
Because
they had the beard and the hair thing, similar thing. Okay.
Back to Mandy. Because one of us has to make this joke, it has nothing to do with Barry Manilow.
I was waiting for the Barry Manilow song to kick in that trailer. That trailer is awesome, by the way.
Yeah. The link will be in the description.
If there was Barry Manilow playing over it, actually.
The link to the trailer will be in the description, of course. It looks a lot like Black Rainbow in terms of how it's shot. Lots of red. The score and sound design are very reminiscent. But imagine that mixed with equal parts Deliverance, Mad Max, and Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Toward the end of the trailer, he makes this metal axe that I desperately want.
It's honestly the best trailer I've seen in a long time, probably since Force Awakens.
Both movies will probably... I'm guessing Mandy will probably have a limited release because it's Panos Cosmatos. That's not a big major motion picture deal. So I'm probably not going to see either of them in the theaters. They're probably not going to play around here. They likely will both play in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure the Music Box will run. Mm-hmm. Probably both of them. I mean, the Music Box runs The Room once a month that like a midnight show kind of thing.
Neil Breen people. You know, I would suggest going there, talking to them about Neil Breen if they don't know about him. You know, spread the good word.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
And anyway, finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 2004, Boa versus Python. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Bad CGI, creating giant man-eating snakes since 1997.
And also brought to you by Boa versus Python. Enjoy the prequel, Giant Mouse, the sequel, Giant Mongoose, and don't miss part 4, Suppose We Built a Large Wooden Badger.
You know, I don't know why she swallowed the fly.
I guess she'll die. All right, so we have scientists, or actually, no, we begin with the hunters, right?
Mm-hmm.
We
begin with a wrestling match, a brilliantly deceptive wrestling match, because the two wrestlers are Boa and the Dragon Python.
Well, right. We have our second movie in about 3 weeks where they actually mention the title of the movie.
But very cleverly in this case.
But yeah, in this case, it is actually quite clever. Boa versus Python, that they mentioned it. Not I'm going to get Deathstalker 2.
Yeah.
That still haunts my nightmares. So we have the spoiled rich people actually first to start. Yeah. And they've organized themselves a bit of a hunt. They're importing, I'm gathering the snake from the last film. Mm-hmm. To that killed a bunch of people in the former Soviet Union. They decided to bring it to Pennsylvania to hunt. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, there was a last film. More on that in sequels and remakes.
Yeah. So anyway, of course, the creature bursts loose. The U.S. government is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, how to stop it. So they bring in our heroes. A marine biologist and a what would you call a snake?
Herpetologist. I often regretted not studying herpetology. I love snakes, for those who don't know.
I don't know if I like guys named Herb that much to really study them, though.
Herpetologist with a P.
Yes. Okay.
I've often regretted that I didn't study herpetology. So I guess according to her, I'm creepy.
So. Then with some, some of our finest, we go for a hunt on them. And meanwhile, the rich people still have their hunt. They just have it in the open.
Trying to track down the snake that they accidentally lost.
Yes. And of course, we have zero security, so they managed to get involved in the middle of it all.
Even though the good guys, the scientists, have military with them. There's, you know, and a base where their handler is talking to his underling. Still no security.
Right. Zero security whatsoever. There's firefights, snake fights, and hilarity ensues, really.
And lots of people getting eaten.
Yes.
And after all of the complications of last week and, you know, completely revising my opinion after talking about it and all the subtext and everything, it's nice to get back to a good old-fashioned cheesy giant snake movie.
What? You didn't see the subtext of this one, John? No, there was no stinking subtext to this one.
Lots of game. And an opening credit sequence that reminded me of a cheesy 90s vampire movie.
It was very off-brand Danny Elfman, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. Now that you mention it. And there is just a lot of 90s in this movie. It's 2004, so I mean, I guess that makes sense. And it's it was supposedly a sci-fi channel movie. This is before they became sci-fi.
Right.
Which is why it wasn't completely ridiculous. But then the nudity really surprised me.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think about that.
I went in thinking it was a sci-fi channel movie, and suddenly there's nudity and a slight amount of profanity.
And I imagine that was cut from the version.
Probably shot for a video, home video release, and then edited down for sci-fi channel. Also, in the wrestling match at the beginning, the ring announcer was good, but he was no Michael Buffer.
No.
Also,
Ramon, I feel there's a lot of people that could do a better ring announcer than that guy, though.
Okay, he was decent.
Pretty.
And I thought Ramon, the Braddock's underling, who was overseeing, you know, the transfer of the snake, looked like he was cosplaying Run-DMC.
Yeah,
he had the hat, the fedora, you know, turned up, and the big chain and the black shirt.
I thought he was a Wahlberg brother at first, yeah, actually.
He's on that way too.
I had to turn on the subtitles for this early in because I had no idea he'd ordered a box of Raisinets. I was like, what the fuck did he say?
And the ref in the wrestling match says to Boa, "I want a good clean fight, no licking, biting, or eating." Biting, okay, we've had incidents with that. But licking and eating.
This was after the biting.
Well, the biting, okay, I can see. Makes sense. We've had issues. And even licking, maybe as a diversionary tactic. But eating?
And again, and like the second time in 3 weeks, repeat after me. Wrestling does not have rounds.
Oh, right, yeah.
For fuck's sake. Wrestling does not have rounds.
Totally didn't.
And at first I thought they were on it, like, you know, they just had the card girls for the beginning of the match. But then I noticed later in the match, they had round two on the cards when they were walking around outside. I was like, oh my God. Does anybody fucking watch wrestling that does a movie? And if you don't watch it, why do you put it in the movie? Have it as a boxing match.
It was a Sci-Fi Channel movie and an 80s cheesy, you know, sword and sorcery movie. It was an excuse for a scantily clad woman to walk around.
Well, right. And of course you want the wrestling thing in. But remember, like, Highlander began with, like, I mean, actual, like, wrestling match, like Big John Studd, and I mean, I mean, granted that I don't know how much it cost them to actually get that into the movie at the time, because right, wrestling was not very big back then. But it doesn't have rounds.
And of course, you know, as they're unloading the snake, it gets out and there's an explosion that they think is going to kill it, which doesn't, of course, because we wouldn't have a movie otherwise.
Well, it's very Three Stooges, you know, he's going to throw the grenade, but then the snake grabs one of the guys with the guns and shoots the guy with the grenade and blows himself up and everybody else.
And the other Darryl Wahlberg dies in the process, which is sad because I kind of wanted to see him hang around.
Yeah, you thought they were kind of building something there and they weren't, which they do a number of times in this movie, and it's quite refreshing actually.
And then after the surprise nudity, actually in the same scene, she finds a snake in the bathroom, takes it out to Braddock, the bad guy, to confront him about it. And he says it's a garter snake. It was not a garter snake.
I mean, right. I have seen garter snakes.
Garter snakes are dark green with yellow stripes.
Right, right.
This thing had like a diamondish kind of pattern. Not a diamond back, probably just like a constrictor.
I think I've seen black ones too, but I mean, yeah, dark green, black, you know.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah,
that was not a garter snake.
No.
If you're making a snake movie, at least get your snakes right.
It's
definitely hard to obtain a garter snake for the scene either.
Yeah, they're pretty common.
Now, one of my favorite parts of the movie, aside from the scientist played by David Hewlett, who I'm a big fan of, loved him since Stargate Atlantis.
Kind of looks like a young Jack Nicholson, I thought.
A little bit, yeah, I can see that. Always plays Rodney McKay, the same character, but he's great at it. Also loved Kent and Lois, the Al-Qaeda obsessed reporter and his cameraman.
Oh, I thought it was Anthony Edwards at first. Oh, he put on some weight.
They were just fun. The reporter was just douchey in a really amusing way.
Yeah.
And
the cameraman just trying to like
just put up with him.
And make him better.
Just kind of trying to correct him. It was really sad when they both died. Well, no, and Kent died because he got eaten. Lewis just disappeared at that point.
I'm out of here.
He was out of the
job. Fuck this.
Now, of course, it's a giant snake movie, so there are large pieces of snake skin that have been shed throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And they're wet.
Is it because it's dry that when they would shed them?
Well, I mean, well, they shed because they outgrow them, but
yeah,
they're dry. So again, if you're making a giant snake movie, at least know a little bit about snakes. Not sure how I feel about the deputy tripping and falling in human entrails yet when they're investigating the explosion that, you know, should have killed the giant snake. Like, it's a pratfall into human body parts.
You want to get yourself cleaned up? You got some liver on your chest there.
There's also a scene I'm not too sure, but actually I think this bought it a half brain. There's a guy and a girl in the back of a car, and he gets pulled out by the snake and eaten. And then they I think they top Dead Snow too.
Well, I mean, getting it from the snake versus the zombie.
Maybe it's not quite as bad as a zombie, but it's close. She's laying there, and I forget the guy's name, but yeah, she thinks he's going down on her, and it's a snake performing, a giant snake performing cunnilingus, yeah, before it eats her, of course.
Yeah.
But one part I'm really not on the fence about, the marine biologist's introduction. Monica, that's her name, her introduction. Yes. Because for about 30 seconds, it turns into a Spring Break movie.
It's very, very confusing.
Like, you know, at a pool, bunch of people in swimsuits, a ton of thongs, the music, the whole nine. She challenges some ex-SEAL to an underwater breathing contest. And then when she sees he's competition for her, and they're down there for like almost a minute, she starts untying her top until he starts to drown. Comes up, wins all the money, and then just when she gets pulled away by the military to go hunt down the giant python. And then she says she's creeped out by herpetologists, which I felt personally attacked by. I mean, I didn't study it, but I always wanted to. Now, I got a kick out of the Bumbling Hunter's entrance.
It was like the beginning of Cannonball Run.
You know, we get the rich asshole hunters.
You have your stereotype of every walk of life, mm-hmm. and they, you know.
We got the bored rich guy, the two like real professional hunters, and then this father and son team in the yellow vests and the camo and the whole nine.
You got like a retired military sniper, you know, who wants to be alpha male in the business there. I guess you have an eccentric Texas hunter.
Yeah, the rich guy who basically has too much money and too many guns.
You've got the guy who decides to use a crossbow.
Yeah. Because he's the other one of the alpha. And then this bumbling father and son, I don't know their purpose in the movie other than to just be the comic relief.
Comic relief. Well, they actually were at least dressed in orange as opposed to, like, they would have actually had the most, the best chance of surviving that. True, true. Since they were actually dressed in orange and not to get caught in the crossfire.
Right. And they, the father got eaten and the son just ran for it, if I recall.
He kind of froze.
He froze and then he got eaten too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, going back to Kent and Lewis, loved Kent's rant after when he says it was a little big, a little much. After they recorded this news a bit, and Kent is just over the top douchey. So it's a little big, a little much. And then he just goes on this, not exactly a rant, but he's just ripping Kent apart, just to kind of tell him, like, basically, you're overdoing it, you're overselling it. Just take it down a little. And then,
well, Kent. He starts this, you know, Al Qaeda thing from out of nowhere, and it's just like, what?
Which is very typical of the era. This is the early thousands. You know, they were crowbarring that in whenever they could. But and then Ken, you know, walks off in a huff and dies. The brief scene, and this is, I'm really not nitpicking, but I'm really getting specific here. They announce when they're, you know, realize it's a giant snake that they're cutting off the water. And later, a little later, there's a scene where people are rushing to get bottles of water. Reminded me of Killer Tomato.
Well, yeah, the fact that they only had like signs with like red you know, X's and like the new price because they're gouging, of course.
And just the crowd, you know, basically mobbing to get all these water just reminded me a couple of scenes from Killer Tomato.
What did you think of Open Snake Surgery?
Okay, so she said she's creeped out by her pathologists. How is she doing surgery on a snake?
Or designing implants for a snake to actually wear.
That's true. I mean,
I think they were supposed to be for dolphins.
Yeah, she worked with dolphins, yeah, because they're cuter. And the python that or the boa, sorry, that they were using was a bit bigger than a dolphin, I think. But yet it fit. It looked kind of like a crown on the
snake. Yeah. It was very Clash of the Titans.
Yes. But I don't know how she knew how to operate on a snake when she hates them so much.
The effects are pretty equivalent to Clash of the Titans,
But the horrible CGI just makes it more fun for me.
Yeah, I would have preferred if they had just shot like above the snake level for the whole movie, like in the nightclub scene when they did that, where they're just like people just moving out of the way. You can't see, you know, the snake is there, though. I would have preferred if they just kept doing that for most of the movie and saved up for like some shots.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. If they did show it at points, not just they didn't just completely shoot around it.
I think if I were making the movie, I would just completely shot around it. That would have been hilarious. It's just whoa.
Now I do appreciate they didn't go for the betrayed by one of their own trope, because when Sharp, their handler, couldn't get a hold of his underling.
Yeah,
I was so expecting her to say, you know, now we're taking this over and, you know, I'm going to stab you in the back. They didn't go there.
They had the weird Brodick like turn to a killer sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure really fit. It really worked. I mean, we know he's an asshole and stuff, right. And we know, you know, he was eccentric, and we know, I mean, he lost his girl. So now he's, you know, like, right. To get revenge.
Oh, and the girlfriend in the, you know, shorts and half shirt camouflage.
Yeah.
That was amusing when you've got these serious hunters.
But I mean, when he starts turning on people, you're just kind of like, really? What?
Yeah. Well, he's just randomly psychopathic.
Well, the movie needed a villain, they knew.
Right.
And because the python just doesn't do it.
Right. And neither team is really you have the good guys and the bad guys just because they're on opposite sides looking for the snake, but they could have worked together. They weren't really the bad guys.
Right.
They were both hunting the same snake. You know? It really did just need a villain. Speaking of villains, I liked the immediate justice of Foley killing Sharp, and then Foley's one of the professional hunters, and then just getting eaten like seconds later.
Well, the foreshadowing there is, of course, you only brought one bullet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I need. It was like, he's not going to last long. Because you've seen so many people shoot this thing for most of this film, and this idiot brings one bullet to take it out. Like, good luck with that.
There was also, a ridiculous Deus Ex Machina when Braddock was arrested.
Oh, yeah.
They're having this big confrontation, I think it was after that, in the sewer. And he's about to kill the scientists. And these G-men just show up and arrest him out of nowhere. It reminded me of the end of Grail.
Yeah.
And Emmett, Hewlett's character, pulls off a couple of interesting things. He's swimming with a gun in his hand. This is a scientist who lives in a lab. How is he going to swim with a gun in his hand? And in another scene, him and Monica have to hide underwater from the snake, and he's holding his breath for an impressively long time, because they established earlier that she can hold her breath for a really long time. And then as he's starting to lose it, as he's starting to, you know, to panic, she kisses him to give him air.
Which,
there's a difference between CO2 and O2.
I mean,
you don't exhale oxygen.
You're going to kind of lose more oxygen, I feel.
Yeah.
If that starts to happen.
Although I was relieved that didn't turn that into a romantic subplot. At least, because I thought I had in my notes at the time, this is the most ridiculously overdone, crowbarred in romantic subplot. They didn't follow it through. Thankful for that. The club scene was just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, especially with Brodick, just, you know.
Or just the beginning of it, because the snake gets into this dance club.
Yeah.
And people are just kind of looking at it and backing off. And don't even know what to make. Nobody screams until it rears up on the DJ. Behind the DJ, and they're all pointing to it, and he thinks they're dancing. And he turns around, and there's this giant snake reared at him.
Of course.
And then Brodick and the scientists show up. And Brodick rips off his shirt for no apparent reason.
Yeah, young Bill Pullman or Bill Pullman's younger brother had to really yeah. show the guns, you know?
It was a total Hulk Hogan moment.
Yeah.
And then Emmett straight up murders him because he tranks him.
Yeah.
And he had to know he was going to get eaten if he was tranked. The snake was right there. If you track the guy, the snake's going to eat him.
I mean, I think he was going to kill everybody just about.
I guess it was a life-saving moment.
Yeah.
But he
flamethrowered, our own troops.
I mean, I'm not saying Brodick didn't deserve it. I'm just surprised that Emmett straight up murdered him.
It was time.
And I mentioned the sudden ending of Grail. We really get the sudden ending in this one.
We do. Well, you got to save room for the sequel.
And there are no twists in this. There's nothing.
Right.
From the dance club, the snake falls through the floor into a subway. The snake was too heavy for the floor, but a packed dance club full of people falls into the subway. Of course, they pay off this electrocution device that's in the good snake, that just separates them in time for the python to get run over by a train.
I mean, they Chekhov'd this, electroshock thing.
yeah.
For all the acts. They introduce it, they bring it out, oh, no, we won't do it this time. Oh, maybe this time. No, we won't do it this time.
Mm-hmm. And then there's this ending bit where Monica and Emmett are some kind of team, off to do some mission with the giant boa. I don't know. They don't specify what.
Oh, I forget what they said. I think they have to find the boa, right?
No, he said, I forget the boa's name, but she's coming with them.
Oh.
I don't know what they were off to do. It was some kind of Avengers Assemble kind of thing at the end, but you have a marine biologist and a herpetologist who were just brought together to find the snake that was now dead. I don't know what's left. At least, again, it wasn't a romantic subplot. By the way, the film was released on DVD by Columbia TriStar on August 24th, 2004. It was later released by Sony Pictures Home Entertainment as part of a multi-pack with Chupacabra Terror, Frankenfish, and Lake Placid 3. We need to find Chupacabra Terra and especially Frankenfish. On the sequels and remakes. The film was a crossover between Python from 2000 and its indirect sequel, New Alcatraz from 2002, also known as Boa.
Okay, I'd never heard of New Alcatraz.
I've never heard of either of them.
But Python, I think it's actually the third in the Python movies. There's two Python movies before this. One in 2000 and one in 2003. And brought them together.
This was a total AVP kind of deal.
Yeah. Sort of an Avengers of snakes.
So, On to Brains. Loved seeing Hewlett in it. Loved Ken Lewis. Kind of loved the bad CG. And that scene in the car, I kind of liked, it just looks so transgressive. But I can't really recommend it. I'm going 3.
Same here. It's enjoyable. I wouldn't tell anybody publicly to go see it. But guilty pleasure it is.
So. And it is on Amazon Prime. So, if this intrigued you, you can see it
there. That's true. What do you have to lose except an hour and a half of your life? Exactly.
All right. So what have we learned?
That this was Monica's Implants Flying Circus.
And I learned that snakes can actually growl. There's a scene.
And do all sorts of weird sounds.
There's a scene in the beginning where, you know, they've got the snake in the truck before it gets free, and it's growling. And I was going to nitpick it, but I wanted to do my research, make sure I was right. Turns out that king cobras do actually growl.
Did not know that. Growl, huh?
Yeah. They make all kinds of interesting noises. Yeah, they don't just hiss, they make a few other noises. So yeah, I actually learned something about snakes, not from the movie, but because I was going to nitpick it.
So that they get right. They don't know about wrestling not having rounds.
Or what garter snakes look like. Yeah. What garter
snakes look like. But that they get right.
I'm just relieved that they got the fact that boas and pythons are constrictors, right? They never said they had venom.
Yeah, the boa hardly did any constricting, though, did you? Except for one woman.
Well, because it was the good one. It was the good snake. Anyway, that's it for Boa versus Python. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like and subscribe if you haven't. We're off next week because I'm a little busy. I've got an appointment on Wednesday afternoon, and we record Wednesday night. And the new WoW expansion comes out on Tuesday, so that's going to be taking up the rest of my time.
And I'm heading out of town, like, almost not long after we finish recording this.
Yeah. So, it'd be nice to not have to do a show right when you get back.
Yeah.
So, until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing Mega Snake, this is kind of a two-parter. I guess it really is a two-parter giant snake movie. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.